What was it like to hear about the JFK assassination? Or America's triumph over Hitler? We're seeing Queen at Live Aid. Our past is a collection of stories that bring us to now. Welcome to the Eyewitness History Podcast, where we view history through the eyes of the people that watch the events that shaped our world. Here's your host, Josh Cohen, and these are their stories.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into this episode of Eyewitness History. This episode, I have the pleasure of speaking with Peggy Grand. President Ronald Reagan chose Peggy Grand to work at his side for 10 years, and together, they created a powerful partnership. Serving as his post-presidency executive assistant, Peggy was the liaison between Ronald Reagan and his staff, the public, local dignitaries, and world leaders. She ensured that his events, travel, personal and political relationships, and his day-to-day operations were handled effectively and efficiently. She drafted and managed correspondence for his original signature, reviewed invitations, scheduled visitors, appointments and phone calls, and attended to a wide range of office and personal needs. Peggy traveled with him, serving as his post-presidency official photographer, which gave her a behind-the-scenes view of his private interactions with everyone from the general public to heads of state, including Mikhail Gorbachev, Margaret Thatcher, Brian Mulroney, and even a saint, Mother Teresa. As a keynote speaker, she has compiled her experiences in a book called The President Will See You Now, which is available, as they say, wherever fine books are sold. Had her on for almost an hour. We discussed a lot. It was great fun, and I hope you enjoy. And now I give you Peggy Grand. Okay. I'm here with Peggy Grand. Peggy, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure. I'm excited to have you on. I want to discuss your life. Certainly, I'd like to discuss your brushes with history. And I also want to discuss your book, The President Will See You Now. Before we get there, will you please tell our listeners briefly sort of who you are and what you do?
Right. Well, I do consider myself one of the luckiest people in the world. I do consider myself to have been fortunate to have a front row seat to history. So I loved it when you reached out about your podcast, because I think I was an eyewitness to very important history. As you said, I wrote a book about my time with President Reagan primarily, but also tells a little bit of my story. And it was unlikely that I found myself to the place that I did, but I was born and raised in Southern California. Might as well have been a million miles from Washington, D.C. Politics was never something I thought I would go into. It was just a little bit of a hobby. And I always would read books about presidents and first ladies and the White House and things like that. And it was just, I guess, a fascination of mine, but nothing I ever thought I would pursue. So I went to college. I went to Pepperdine University there locally in Southern California. Again, nothing to do with politics. I didn't study political communications because what are the chances that I would ever do anything in the political arena, right? But I did study communications, and the great communicator, Ronald Reagan himself, was in the White House during my really formative years, a little bit of elementary school, junior high, high school, and early college. And that really shaped my idea of what a president is, what a president looks like, how they sound, how they talk to the American people. And so as a communications major, I studied him very closely from more of an academic perspective, studied his word choices and how he created messages that people wanted to listen to and follow. And I was one of probably millions of people who watched him on TV as he came into your living room on one of your three channels on the old dial TV. And somehow you felt he was just talking directly to you, and you wanted to be part of his vision for America, which was beautiful and compelling and inspirational. And so that's kind of my background. I got interested in him as a person because of my interest in presidents and first ladies, and never imagined I would have a chance to meet him, let alone work for him. But life sometimes has a crazy way of presenting those opportunities. And I was fortunate to have one of those opportunities, but I'm sure we'll get into that. So
yeah, no, that's fantastic, Peggy. Thank you so much. Yeah. So then moving forward, when was it you first met Ronald Reagan? Can you recall?
Absolutely. I will never forget the first moment I met him. I was the college student at Pepperdine, and I guess this wasn't my first time I met him, but the first time I saw him in person, he actually came to Pepperdine University. It was, I think, maybe his second speech after he had left office. And so it was early in 1989. He left office in January of 89, and he came to Pepperdine University and gave a speech. And typical college student, I overslept my alarm, but I went running down to the field house where he was speaking. I probably sat in the last row of the field house. But the electricity in the air and just being in the same room with somebody like that who was so important and so powerful, it was really a magical moment. I like to think maybe I invented the selfie because I actually have turned the camera around back in the old film days, so you never know it's going to work. I have a selfie with Ronald Reagan speaking at Pepperdine with me up in the rafters and him a little tiny, like, Where's Waldo type creature in the back. But it was this magical electric moment. And so fast forward just a few months later, I'm going into my final semester at Pepperdine. Like I said, I was a communications major, and my dad raised me to believe that somebody's got to have the job you want, and it might as well be you. So I took a chance and wrote a letter, probably on an old typewriter, licked a stamp, stuck it in an envelope, mailed it off with a prayer, and never thought I would ever hear from the office of Ronald Reagan. But a couple of weeks later, I'm sitting in my dorm room, my telephone rings, I pick it up, and it's a woman from the office of Ronald Reagan. And she said she received my letter, that they were doing interviews for internships, and would I like to come in. And you don't say no to an opportunity like that. And I thought, even if I stepped foot on the floor where Ronald Reagan worked, it would be the most exciting day of my life. And so, of course, I agreed to the interview. I was extremely nervous. I had never met or been around anybody important or of stature like that. My family was very middle class. They were class of educators. They were lovely, wonderful people, but weren't the donor class, weren't involved in these big wealthy circles. And so it certainly was not something I was comfortable with. But I was working my way through college at Nordstrom. So I did have an amazing wardrobe. So wearing what I was going to wear to the interview was not a stressor. Wardrobe check. Everything else, I was going to have to wing it when I got there. So I get there to the office. I have a lovely conversation with a woman who was just warm and welcoming and so gracious and put me at ease. And I actually thought the interview had gone pretty well. So the interview's over. I go to the front office, and thankfully they agreed to validate my parking because as a starving college student, I was a little worried that I might not even have enough money to get out of the parking garage in Century City. And I was, as I was waiting for the woman to come out with the parking validation stickers, the door on the opposite side of the lobby opens up, and walking toward me all of a sudden is United States Secret Service Ronald Reagan himself. Wow. He was with Walter Annenberg. I found out later they were on their way to a golf game. And you have to understand, I didn't know what to do. And so I panicked and I thought, they don't know who I am. They don't know what I'm doing here. Are they going to arrest me? Are they going to shoot me? Should I run? Should I hide? What should I do? So that all these panic thoughts went through my head. And I instantaneously decided that what would I do if the flag was passing by? And so out of respect, I stood up and I put my hand over my heart and didn't even look at him, just kind of stared off into the distance so that it was non-threatening. I'm sure I looked completely ridiculous. But Ronald Reagan, instead of walking past me and laughing like he should have done, he walked right to me. He stuck out his hand. He said hello to me. I introduced myself to him. Of course, he needed no introduction. And even though I was horribly embarrassed, it's that moment that I will never forget. Looking into those bright blue eyes for the first time that were so sparkly and so full of life. And as much as I was terribly embarrassed by what had happened, I love that moment because that moment is seared in my mind forever. And over the course of the next 10 years, I would watch thousands of people have that moment with him. And he never missed an opportunity to look people in the eye, to make them feel special, heard, valued, even in that split second. So he was whisked away as quickly as he stopped. And the woman who had interviewed me saw the whole thing and looked over and kind of laughed at me. And I said, you should have warned me. And she said, no, it's better this way, which I kind of agree now. But she said, well, we were going to wait until a few days from now to call you and at least leave you in suspense for a bit. But we know we already want you to work here. So can you start on Monday? Yes, I can. And so that was how the story began. I was hired for what I thought would be just a short-term internship, maybe for the final semester as I was graduating from college. But at the end of that term, the woman actually who had interviewed me, she returned to Washington, D.C., and they asked me to take over her job. And so I went from being a volunteer in the office to having a full-time staff position in the office of Ronald Reagan. I served as the executive assistant to the chief of staff. Also ran the internship program. So it was on the other side of that interview process hundreds of times over the next 10 years. And a couple of years after I had taken over the role as the EA to the chief of staff, Ronald Reagan's longtime executive assistant he had had since governor years, she retired and they asked me to take that job. And so you don't say no to a job opportunity like that, but I was 6 months pregnant at the time, wasn't quite sure how that was all going to work out. But the Reagans were wonderful. I wound up staying, serving Ronald Reagan from 1989 to 1999. So right after he left the White House until he left the public eye in 1999. And I'm sure we'll get into some of those later years later, but had three of my four kids while I was working for him. And it was just chaotic and wonderful and a blessing to have a front row seat to history, all the people that came in and all the places we went. And it truly was remarkable. So I'm glad my dad reminded me that somebody's got to have the job you want. It might as well be you. And how blessed I am that it was me.
Absolutely. No, that's wonderful, Peggy. Thank you so much. That might be one of my favorite stories I've ever heard.
Are you laughing of embarrassment for me?
No. Just what a wonderful story to have. It's fun. It's quirky. And it has the benefit of being true. So
exactly. We love that.
I'd love to get into a little bit about Reagan's character. Obviously, the political stuff aside, though, obviously we can't ignore it completely. I'm curious how you would characterize him as not as a politician, but as a person. And as a follow up, who are some of the people you think that helped make him the man that he was?
Yeah, well, I'll talk to his character a little bit because there's so many things that are written about him as a president. And, you know, I was still in school, so I've obviously followed his policies since then. But at the time, I really had an opportunity to see him as a person. And what a blessing to be able to experience that. You know, he left the White House where he had thousands, if not tens of thousands of people working for him. And in his post-presidency office, there was just a handful of us. And so we really got that chance to interact with him personally and see what kind of person he was. And so for anybody, politics aside, if they had an admiration for him as a person, I can tell them, he was exactly what you thought and hoped that he was. He was warm. He was charming. He was funny. He was polite. He was the eternal gentleman. And, you know, a lot of people, and you've probably interviewed people that you hear about famous people, you admire them from afar, and then you meet them up close and you think, wow, they're really not what I expected at all. And Ronald Reagan was the exact opposite. Whatever the pedestal that you had put him on was, he truly was that and probably even more. And having worked closely with him for over a decade, I can tell you the man was true. He was an only in America story that I learned so much from. And even though he was known as the great communicator, it wasn't the things that I learned from him through his words. It was through his actions, the way he treated people, the way he responded to stressful sometimes situations and approached everything with an optimism, with a faith, with a patriotism that inspires me still today.
Yeah, no, excellent. No, wonderful. Thank you, Peggy. And actually, to sort of sharpen that point, speaking to his character, you relay this in your book, but I'd love for you to talk about when Reagan met a boy with Asperger's.
Yeah, there's a couple. It was interesting because when I was asked to write the book, what do you say about a man that has over 1,000 books written about him? And yet I knew that I had a very unique vantage point. And I had a window into years that nobody else could really write about. Because like I said, there was just a handful of us. And so as I was reflecting on what I would talk about and what I would write about, you know, my parents, of course, said, well, don't you wish you had kept a diary every day? And well, in some ways, that would have made it easier. I would have known exactly what I did and where I went and who I saw. It wouldn't have been the same thing because I really had to dig deep and think about what it all meant. So after 10 years, we met tens of thousands of people. We went hundreds of places together. I watched, you know, a million people probably shake his hand. But what were the moments that really rose up above the rest? And why were those so meaningful? And so I'm really appreciative, actually, that I didn't keep a diary. I did go back and look at our schedule then to, you know, remind me of some incidences. But there's a couple of stories I tell in the book, and one of them specifically is about a little boy with Asperger's. And I wanted to give people a window into the type of person that he was and what he valued after the presidency. And so here's a man who could have spent his whole day doing luxurious, selfish activities. And yet, even at his advanced age, he chose to come to the office almost every day. He met with people, he wrote, he traveled, he spoke. And some of the people that he met were not people who were famous or of stature. They were ordinary, hardworking Americans that had written into him and asked for an opportunity to meet him. There were veterans and war heroes. And one day we did have a family write in that had a little boy, maybe he was about 8 years old, and he had Asperger's. And if you know anything about that, it's they get these topics that they're really obsessed with. And this little boy was obsessed with Ronald Reagan, and his parents wrote for an opportunity for him to come in and meet him. And so we brought this little boy in. The parents were very nervous about it, just unsure about how he would respond and act. And, you know, sometimes they can be a little bit unpredictable at that age anyway, but you add an extra dimension. And the parents were very worried. And I assured them that Ronald Reagan would be perfectly fine and that everything would be handled beautifully. So this little boy comes in and he marches right up to Ronald Reagan, and he basically starts telling Ronald Reagan all about his life story before he asks any questions. And so he's just kind of reciting all these facts. And then when he did ask a question, sometimes the president would give a response and the little boy would say, "No, that's not right. That's not right. That's not what I read." And, you know, try to correct him. And the president just would kind of laugh and smile. And it was a really sweet moment. And what I loved about that was, that wasn't a publicity stunt. You know, there was no media there. It wasn't something that he did so that people would talk about it or write about it. Sorry, Mr. President, I did. But it was after the fact. And that's the type of person that he was. And one of the reflections I think that I have is that your legacy is not something that's written after you're gone. It's something you're writing with every single day of your life. And so these were the elements of Ronald Reagan's legacy that he was writing every day. And this is why we still talk about him all these years later, is not because he's gone, but because of how he lived. And even a moment like this, where maybe not that many people knew about it, that's who he was. That's who he was when he thought nobody was watching. And yet I'm so fortunate because I was always watching, and I got a chance to see these beautiful moments that really revealed the character of Ronald Reagan, the man, the person, not just the president.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's wonderful, Peggy. I love that story. And Mr. Reagan, I believe, gave him, if I read this right, a jar of black jelly beans. Did I read that right?
He definitely gave him a jar of jelly beans. Now, Ronald Reagan's favorite were the black licorice ones, which people have strong opinions about. You love them or you hate them. I personally hate them. He loved them. But we have these beautiful glass jars that he gave the little boy of multicolored jelly beans so that he could enjoy them. And the little boy, of course, was very appreciative. And the parents told him promptly that he would not eat them all at once.
That's wonderful. What would you say was your most memorable experience working with Reagan?
Oh, that's actually a tough one because there were so many. You know, I'll name drop, since you gave me the softball. I'll name drop, I guess. That's the best way I'll use this question. But it was just a virtual who's who. So during his post-presidency, people from across the nation and around the world came in. And, you know, I gave you an example of one very, you know, insignificant on the world stage, yet very significant to Reagan visitor that came in. But we also had people like Gorbachev, like Margaret Thatcher, Mother Teresa, who became a saint. We had every president and first lady. We had prime ministers and kings and presidents from all over the world that came in. And what was interesting about that is, you know, post-presidency, he can't do anything for them. He really doesn't wield any power. Diplomatically or protocol wise, it's not required that they pay a courtesy visit when they're in LA. But these people had a relationship with President Reagan that had endured, some of them, for a long time, that they wanted to keep intact. And so everybody from Margaret Thatcher, who came several times, who was very, as the Brits would say, cheeky, and she and Reagan would just belly laugh together and have such a wonder. They had such a warm and wonderful friendship that had gone back to before he was even president and before she was prime minister. And so they were very close personally, not just aligned politically. You know, Mother Teresa, this little teeny tiny woman, but a giant on the world stage. And they were about the same age. And yet Reagan was strong and polished and tall. And Mother Teresa was really this very petite little woman whose face and hands and feet showed weathering from all the terrible places that she had been and all the hard places she had served. And, you know, to see these two people side by side, and of course, meeting Gorbachev for the first time, and he's walking toward me, and I think, oh, he really does have a big red birthmark on his head. That's definitely Gorbachev. And to watch these two former foes develop a friendship of sorts. You know, Lech Walesa, who came from Poland, who Reagan was very influential for him. Helmut Kohl in Germany, that was with him when he gave that Berlin Wall speech. Prime Minister Nakasone. People from all over the world. And again, they didn't do it for diplomatic or protocol reasons. They did it because they liked him. And I guess one of many takeaways I have from those years is, you know, we think sometimes that diplomacy is something for the Foreign Service or the State Department, but diplomacy in its core really looks a lot like friendship. And with these people and with others, it wasn't about rhetoric. It was about the relationship, and it wasn't political. It was personal. And so to watch these people that you had seen from afar giving their very formal speeches to then laugh and share life and share stories. And, you know, there's one of my favorite pictures in my book. I snapped after a black tie event with Margaret Thatcher, and Ronald Reagan is sitting on the end of the couch, and you've got Lady Thatcher and Nancy Reagan holding glasses of wine. They've got long dresses, floor-length dresses on, but they've kicked their shoes off because it's the end of the evening, and they're both in stocking feet, and they are in rapt conversation. And Ronald Reagan at the other end of the couch is slouched back with his head and his eyes rolled back in his head like, ladies, stop talking so we can go home. And it's one of my favorite pictures because it just captures that very human moment, and it captures that friendship and that relationship. So that was really what diplomacy was all about. The Reagan way was friendly. You know, even the Queen came up to the ranch, which if you've read anything about the ranch, it was very humble, not exactly Buckingham Palace. And he didn't care. That's where his heart was. And so he wanted to share it with people who were important to him, even the Queen.
Yeah, that's wonderful. No, thank you. I'm curious if there were any, perhaps I'll phrase it this way. What lessons did you take away from your time working with him?
Well, I worked for him when I was really young. And so I was just starting not only in the political arena, but in the professional arena as well. So in a lot of ways, I was spoiled because I had the best job I will ever have in my 20s and into my 30s. You know, Secret Service driven cars everywhere. We flew private aircraft everywhere. It completely ruined me for the rest of my life. So now that I, you know, fly coach and drive my own car, it's really, it's been downhill from there. But I think as a young person, stepping into a space like that, I thought initially you had to choose one of two paths. You either could choose to be strong and successful, or you could be a kind, good person. But I don't think as a young person, I realized that you could actually do both. And so then I meet Ronald Reagan, who nobody argues he was strong and successful because he stood on the world stage, not only as president of the United States, but arguably leader of the free world. And but behind that strength and that power and that resolve that actually called on the Berlin Wall to come down, and it came down, there was this beautiful person who was warm and gracious and kind and humble and was very attentive and aware and appreciative of others around him. And so it completely blew up my model of what success looks like. And I realized you don't have to choose one of two paths, that you can actually do both. And he showed us that pathway, not in a way that is a template that everybody has to be just like Ronald Reagan, but for me, he showed me that it's possible. And that you can do both of those and be successful and not do it on the backs of other people, but bring people along with you. Create a vision that's inspirational, that's patriotic, that makes people want to follow you instead of forcing them to follow you. And as the leader, he was somebody everybody wanted to follow. even regardless of politics. A lot of people across the aisle look to him still and say, wow, he was a great leader. We may not have always agreed with him politically, but we certainly couldn't dislike him personally. And I think that's what success looks like.
No, great answer, Peggy. Wasn't it, I might have this wrong, I'm going off the top of my head, but wasn't it Tip O'Neill that held
the former Speaker of the House? Yeah.
Yeah. They were very good friends, weren't they?
Yeah. So the joke was, you know, they would kind of beat each other up politically during the day, but after 6 p.m., they could, you know, share a drink, share some laughs. You know, Tip O'Neill had Irish heritage, just like Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan always says that he got from his dad the gift of gab. And so Reagan could tell a story like no one else. And so he realized and demonstrated that you could disagree with somebody personally, but it didn't mean you had to hate them. And so now these days, we see that if we disagree with somebody, we have to cancel them or disassociate with them or hate them personally. And he really showed that we can disagree with people without being disagreeable. And I think that was a great lesson to also learn, especially at a young age.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe just to sharpen that a little bit, Larry King, on one of his interviews, he relayed a very similar story that Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan are going at it like cats and dogs. And then 601 rolls around and Reagan gets a call from Tip O'Neill. Reagan, did you hear the one about the guy who went into the bar?
Yeah, he had a great capacity to compartmentalize things and not take things personally. And, you know, I think these days a lot of people are thin skinned. And I know that that's difficult sometimes to not take things personally. But I think it's okay to stand on your principles, to believe in what you believe in, and to advocate passionately for those ideas. But it doesn't always have to go to the personal attacks that we see so much today.
Yeah, no, couldn't agree more. A lesson that everyone should bear in mind. You hinted at it a few moments ago, Peggy, just how much traveling you did with Reagan. And I think I'd like to ask you the question directly. So post-presidency, how often did you travel with Reagan? Were you always with him or did you sometimes stay behind? What did that schedule look like?
Yeah, especially in the early years, especially when I was an intern, I stayed back and manned the desks in the office. And then as the years went on, it just depended on how many staff were needed. Sometimes we would kind of leapfrog ahead of each other. If it was going to be a long trip and he was going to 3 or 4 cities, I would go to one city and somebody would go to another city. And so again, you think of these huge advance teams that go before the president of the United States when he goes someplace. And sometimes I would get sent to a city and maybe I'd be the only person. And I think I mentioned it in the book, but it was a little intimidating. One of my first advance trips I went, it was to someplace really exciting like Iowa. You know, I'm jealous. I get all the hot spots. No offense to my friends in Iowa. I do love going to the Midwest because that's where his heart was. But I land at this airport someplace in Iowa and I go over to the rental car counter, had a reservation, had my government ID, had a business card saying that I was working for the former president of the United States, and I wasn't 25 yet and I couldn't even rent a car. So I'm the only advance person on point in this city for an event that Ronald Reagan is coming to in just a few days. And I don't even have transportation. And so, of course, I was not about to call the office and say, oh, this isn't going to work. You know, I just figured it out. And this was pre-Uber, pre-internet, hit the app on your phone. And so I had to be a little resourceful to get it done. But nobody in the office even knew until later that I had just figured it out and made it happen, but was too young to even rent a rental car. So they put a lot of faith and trust in me. And I don't know that I was worthy of it all the time, but I certainly tried to rise to the occasion because I wanted to serve him well and serve him in a way that he was used to.
Yeah, that's hilarious, Peggy. Is it true that you were his official photographer as well? Do I have that right?
Yeah. So again, you know, I guess my dad taught me to just kind of be scrappy and, you know, fake it till you make it, I guess, type of thing. And so I was still an intern in the office. And one day there was a couple of things kind of happening simultaneously in the office. And so my supervisor said, Peggy, do you know how to take pictures? And do you think you could handle this meeting, bring these people in, supervise the meeting, take photos and, you know, just kind of manage it start to finish? And I said, sure, no problem. And I'm thinking, I don't know anything about taking pictures. You know, I maybe had like the little photo roll, the, you know, the little cardboard box photo cameras, but I was certainly not a photographer, but I thought, okay, I'm just going to say yes and figure it out. So I think I found the manual, did about a little 5-minute read on how to get the auto settings on, and hoped and prayed that that appointment went well enough that I would be asked to do it again. So, and back in the day, you know, these are film cameras. And so I'm thinking, well, the worst case scenario, they won't even know for a week if I took bad pictures or not, right? Because they have to go to the lab. So at least if I won't be fired for at least a week if they're terrible. But it worked out. And Ronald Reagan was such a great subject to photograph. You know, he had been an actor. And so between, he always had the best angle. He was always polished and dressed perfectly. He always stood with great posture. He always looked at the camera and smiled. You couldn't take a bad picture of Ronald Reagan. And so it made me look like a very good photographer, even though I think I had a very good subject matter to work with. So after that first appointment, you know, it started becoming more and more frequent. Well, could you handle this appointment? Could you handle that appointment? Can you come with us on this event and take photos? And so I just sort of fell into it, and I still wouldn't necessarily consider myself a photographer, but I did have access to probably one of the most photographed people in history. And I feel very fortunate to have been able to take some photos like that one with Lady Thatcher and Mrs. Reagan that nobody had really even seen until the book came out. And when I was asked to do the book, actually, I said, well, I don't know what one word inside of it is going to say, but I know what picture I want on the cover. And so I know they can't see it. They're going to have to go to Amazon and see the picture, or Barnes and Noble or some local bookstore to see the picture on the cover. But that picture on the cover of my book, I walked into his office one morning right after he had arrived, and the early morning sunshine was coming in the side. And it was just one of those moments that the lighting was perfect. It had this warm glow, and it looked like a photograph. And uncharacteristically, because he was in the middle of some work, I said, Mr. President, you look especially handsome today. Do you mind if I take your picture? And his little, well, all right. And so I ran and grabbed the camera and I snapped one photograph. And that photograph is the one that's on the cover of my book. And I love it because it just captures him in those post-presidency years. You can see a few wrinkles in his hands. You can see a little gray in his hair. And yet he has that warm glow, that smile, that sparkle in his eyes. If you look really closely, he's wearing a little California Golden Bear tie tack. He loved, obviously, and was proud of spending so many years in California as its governor and as a resident for so many years. And so that one photo, I loved. I had it enlarged, hung above my desk for many years in the office of Ronald Reagan. And so I said, I don't know what the book's going to say, but I know what I want on the cover.
Oh, that's wonderful. No, thank you, Peggy. When was the last time that you saw Reagan? Can you recall?
Yeah, I do recall. And I wrote a lot about the final years of his life in my book. I was a little unsure about whether that would be appropriate to do so, but it was something that he had spoken so publicly about. And he and Mrs. Reagan both had used their brushes with cancer and other illnesses to help other people. And so as he went into his announcement of his Alzheimer's, I felt that that was fair game, something to share about, because he had shared about it and wanted to bring awareness and research dollars to something that a lot of people had been living with kind of a shame and a stigma around it. And so those final years were very difficult to write about, but I also think they showed the beauty of this man, where when you stripped away all the trappings of being president and took away all the pomp and circumstances, what you were left with was the beautiful person that we saw come out of the Midwest, from a family where they were dirt poor. He had a father who was an alcoholic. He was raised by a woman of faith who taught him to believe that anything was possible. And when you took away all the presidency stuff, the things that were left were really the things he began with. And so it was this beautiful circle of life story. And, you know, I wasn't sure about writing a book in the first place, especially with those really sensitive years. But I spoke at an event many years ago now, and a man came up to me afterwards. He works out of the Presidential History Project out of the University of Virginia. And he said, Peggy, you have to write a book. And I gave him the brush off that I gave everybody. Oh, no, I never would. It doesn't seem appropriate, because with proximity comes this sort of this promise that you're not going to ever disclose things. And so I wanted I didn't know what that would ever look like. And so, but he said to me something that really changed my mind, not immediately, but it stuck with me. And he said, Peggy, if there was a woman who sat outside Abraham Lincoln's office door for 10 years, don't you think we would want to know what she saw, what she learned, what she observed? And don't you think she would owe it to history to tell us? That was a little convicting, and that stuck with me. And so many years later, when I was approached to write this book, I thought of those words and I thought, okay, maybe this is a story that only I can tell and that needs to be told, because it showed the beauty that came out of the simplicity of those final years. And so to your point now, answering your question, when's the last time I saw him? I do write about 3 visits that I made to his house after I was no longer working for him. So we think that he left office, he got Alzheimer's, and he died. But there was 15 years in there, and the first 5 years were really active. About 5 years after his presidency, he announces to the world that he has Alzheimer's. And so in a lot of ways, people start saying goodbye to him then, but I'm still saying good morning to him every day. And so what did those 5 years look like, where the world knew he had this disease that eventually would diminish his capacity, and yet he had a beautiful way of continuing on as best as he could, as long as he could. And that inspired all of us. And so then after he leaves the public eye in 1999, and I stop working in the office, he lives for another 5 years. And so I write about 3 of those visits, going up and visiting with him, and how tender and special and memorable those were in entirely different ways, and how I got a chance to really thank him and show appreciation for all that I learned from him and all he taught me and left with me without even knowing and realizing it. And so just a few months before he passed away, I made my last visit to see him. And I remember sitting by his bedside, Mrs. Reagan and I would talk regularly, and she was going to be out for a couple hours that day. And she asked if I would come, if I wanted to come over and spend some time with the president. And so you never pass up an opportunity. And every time, the last few times I had been, you don't know if that's going to be the last one or not. But
right. What
a special afternoon. And I got a chance to sit there. By that time, he was sleeping a lot. And I got to sit by his bedside and hold his hand and, you know, did a little bit of talking, but just a lot of sitting and just memorizing that face. Every contour of his face, his hands, his ears, his profile. And that hair that always still was beautiful on his head. And Mrs. Reagan did such a good job of caring for him in those final years. And to have that last opportunity to sit by his bedside and to thank him, not only for myself, but really on behalf of the American people and the world, for what an inspiration he had been. And, you know, I told the story at the beginning, and I write about in the end, Mrs. Reagan comes home and I'm saying my final goodbye. And how do you say goodbye to a person like that and thinking it might be your last time? And so I actually did at the last goodbye what I did at the first time I met him. And I stood up by his bedside, put my hand over my heart, and just thanked him for who he was, for how he had served, how he had loved this country, how he had loved America and Americans, and in so many ways had inspired the world. And I walked out, cried all my way home, and that wound up being the last time I saw him. But what a beautiful memory, and just an incredible opportunity to be able to say goodbye and to say thank you.
Truly, wow, wonderful. Thank you for sharing that, Peggy. You touched on it, and it's something that I want to make sure I touched on as well. How important was faith to him in his personal life? Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, it was very important to him, and especially in his final years. And again, you know, he was very tolerant of anybody, and you had the right in America to believe or not believe in God. But that didn't make him apologetic for what he believed. He was bold and unapologetic about his faith, about advocating and protecting people of faith and their freedom and their right to be protected under the Constitution and the laws of the land, and to have equal right to speak out on the things that gave them faith and comfort. And in those final years, especially, I really saw his faith come in. There's a lot of days that I would walk into his office, and he had obviously a big bookshelf with lots of pictures and mementos. And there were several days in those final years, especially, where I would walk in and his Bible would be open on that site counter to a particular verse or a passage. And you could tell it was a well-worn, well-loved book. And in his final years, probably one of the biggest challenges was that, especially after he announced that he had Alzheimer's, it was really difficult for him to go to church. And he had looked forward to the day when he could go to church after he left office, because during his presidency, it was really difficult for him to go. It was just, it was dangerous for the other parishioners. It was a big inconvenience. And he just thought it was too difficult. So he did not attend church in person during the presidency and was really looking forward to doing so when he left office. And so he almost immediately started going to Beller Presbyterian Church, where he had faithfully attended for many years. But then after he announced that he had Alzheimer's, the paparazzi would show up in church and take pictures. And it was just very inappropriate. And so once again, he made the decision to not attend church, but I arranged with his pastor to come and visit with him midweek. And so during office hours, his pastor would come in almost every week and bring maybe a program from Sunday's lesson. He would give him a little vignette of the service. He would pray with him. He would read scripture with him. And so, especially as he was facing those years of Alzheimer's, coming to grips with that, it was very important to him to have that support and that direct connection with somebody of faith who could be there with him, and reinforce his faith in God. And so it was something so important to him. He got that from his mother, Nellie, who was an incredible woman of faith and instilled that in him. And that carried with him to his final days. And as a person of faith myself, it was beautiful to see that somebody who had loved and served God for so many years at a time when he was so challenged and was facing his darkest hours, that didn't make him doubt God. It made him cling to God. And so his faith was something very real to him to the very end.
Yeah, absolutely, Peggy. I have just a few questions left, and then you're no longer my prisoner. How's that sound?
Oh, I've enjoyed it. I could go on and on. I'll spare you and your listeners, but so many things to share, and I appreciate the platform to do so.
No, it's my pleasure. I appreciate taking the time. I'd love to know, what would you say is the main thing that you'd like people to know about President Reagan, if anything?
Well, I always like to use his words rather than mine. And so, you know, if you ask Ronald Reagan what he was most proud of after his presidency, it wasn't anything he had done or said or policies he had implemented or things he had signed. He said the thing he was most proud of is making the American people believe in themselves again. And if you recall the 1970s, inflation was high, taxes were high, unemployment was high. American morale was very low. And on day one of his presidency, he changes all that by saying, "It's morning in America. There's a shining city on the hill, and we all get to be part of it. America's best days are yet ahead." So from a place of despair and malaise, he paints an entirely different picture that we all want to be part of. And so that's something that he personally was very proud of. And then his final public speech that he gave that was widely covered was the 1992 Republican National Convention in Houston. And he leaves us with such beautiful words. And he basically says, "Whatever else history may say about me when I'm gone, may it say that I appealed to your best hopes, not to your worst fears, to your confidence rather than your doubt." And I think of that so often, because today when we think of politics, what do we think of? Fear, doubt, division, conflict. And he said, that's not what it's about. It's about inspiring people, appealing to their best confidence, painting a picture of their best hopes, and finding a way collectively to get there. And so I would say that those are the things that he would want to be remembered for and by. And those are certainly the things that I think of when I think of him, because those are his words that he left for us to remember him by.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Peggy. Oh, and I want to make sure we get this out. Where can people pick up the book, Peggy?
It's available anywhere, hardback, paperback. There's audiobook that I read myself, also ebook. And if people want to reach out to me on social media or my website, I'm happy to send them a signed book plate if they get an old school page turning book. I also respond if people read it and enjoy something about it or have a question. I try to get back to everybody who writes to me. And the gift of time is the greatest gift, and it's the smallest resource that we have. And so when people give my story, my book, my words, the gift of their time, I want to show appreciation for that. And I'm always grateful for that. And I do think that people across party lines. It's not a political story. It's a personal story. It's a character sketch of a man who in many ways inspired the nation and changed the world. And what was he really like? That's what the book talks about.
Excellent. Excellent. So then aside from Reagan, Peggy, you also joined the Trump administration as a political appointee.
I did.
Yeah. And I'd love to know, how exactly did that come about and what was the experience like?
Yeah, well, after I left working for President Reagan, I raised a few kids for a few years, but always stayed in because I have four kids who are now grown. But there were some busy years back then. But after that, I started getting more involved politically. I was asked to speak at events. I started writing a little bit of note. Recently, I do international media. I write opinion pieces. I do a lot more in the political space now. And so I had a bunch of friends who had joined the Trump administration, asked if I would consider coming in as a political appointee. And it was a great opportunity to serve my country, to go to Washington, D.C., to serve a president who I also believe loved America and loved Americans of all kinds, and maybe communicated in a different way than Reagan, but always communicated directly to the people, not through the media, went around them just like Ronald Reagan did. And so there were many similarities, and I was proud to serve the president, serve the American taxpayer, and to do so in a way that I think was positive and patriotic.
Wonderful. Peggy Grand, how can people find out about you?
I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn. I got kicked off Facebook, but I'm on Instagram. I also have a website, peggygrandy.com. You can invite me to speak at an event, ask questions about my book, read my media articles, and see my television spots and anything there.
Excellent, Peggy. This was such a pleasure. Thank you again for taking the time for me.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And my gratitude to your audience as well for taking time to listen.
Thank you, Peggy. You take care, okay?
Great. Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. For more information on Eyewitness History, along with show notes and links to resources, go to ParthenonPodcast.com, where you can also listen to some other great podcasts by the Parthenon Network, such as Scott Rank's History Unplugged, Steve Guerra's Beyond the Big Screen, and James Early's Key Battles of American History, along with many others. Thank you.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art, inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.